Welcome to the Racing Home Podcast. You're joined by my host, Nick Agutter, and myself, Fez Bobber.
Not Bagar?
Bagar. Oh, yeah, Bagar. That's a good one. I was so annoyed.
We'll touch on that one. But hey, everyone. So yeah, episode number 3. And this time we got Fez back. Because Fez was actually in Hawaii last time I recorded for episode 2 with Richard.
Dished me immediately. Well, no, like, he's gone now. I'm out. Gotta get a new host. Yeah.
Bro, I texted you. You were like, no, I can't do it. Well,
and you could have been like, oh yeah. It's like, we can just wait a couple days. I don't know. But no, you just dished me with another man. In your life.
I got another man in my life. Well, I was really wanting to talk about like that track sprint that Richard and I had done. So, and Richard was there as well. So it worked out. Just had it was just me and just me podcast with Richard. But so how was the Hawaii trip for you?
It was good. It was my first family vacation in like a decade or something like that. So, no, more than a decade. So it was good. We just went out. And did all Hawaii type of stuff, beach stuff. I wanted to go hiking, but I didn't get a chance to do that. But I was in the water quite a bit. I'm like 15 shades darker. weird tans all over my body.
Yeah, I'm still recovering from my watch tan from the summertime. Because all the different times I went out to the lake and to the different events.
Oh,
quite the watch tan.
Oh, the watch tan is pretty cool.
Yeah. Speaking of what?
I wanted to add something on that too. Like, I didn't know I had someone that would follow me from Hawaii. And they messaged me when they found out I was in Hawaii, but it was a little too late. There was a Toyota car meet in Hawaii. That they invited me out to where I was at.
That was pretty cool.
I didn't get a chance to go because I had to go to, we were flying to a different island. But apparently like that's a pretty common, pretty like cool car meet that's just Toyota only, like old Toyotas, Lexuses and whatnot that show up out there. And there's a huge community of Toyota owners in Hawaii, specifically like Tacoma owners with they're super lifted with like rubber band tires, like a front end tire.
Wait, the rear. Hold on. Like Carolina
it's
squad.
Like Carolina squad, but for Hawaii. That's basically what that is.
Oh, that would have been kind of interesting to like go out there, just like get photos and see what it looks like.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's pretty cool.
I didn't know that was over there in Hawaii.
Tacomas are one of the most common cars out there.
I would have pictured that like Jeeps would be incredibly popular.
That's no, it's
Toyota's, really like that sounds like the perfect vehicle. Top down, sun blowing your like.
There's a lot of Jeep rentals, but the people that live there own 4Runners and Tacomas.
Reliability.
Hells yeah.
Yeah, I picture myself if I was in Hawaii, want some kind of off-road rig so I can kind of explore the islands and drive out on the beach. Can you drive on beaches?
Yeah, there's some beaches that you can too.
Okay, that's what I figured, but like not all beaches are drivable or accessible. And a convertible. Like it just, that island, living over there, the environment just seems like I'd want to have the top down all the time.
Yeah,
assuming it's not raining.
We went to Kauai. Kauai rains a lot there around this time of the year too. So we rented out Camaros and Mustangs, convertibles. So my family wanted to
V6 or V8s.
They're all V6s, or no, not even V6s, inline four turbo.
Oh, if it wait the Camaros have inline. Oh,
yeah,
it
I didn't
is
know
that.
Yeah, I didn't know. I forgot the Camaros had inline four turbos. So it just.
Is it the 2.7 that's in the new Colorado?
I have no idea, but it was trash. Absolutely freaking trash. I did not like that car.
Well, hopefully it's
hopefully
Colorado's having something a little bit more stout. If it's going to have a 7,000
pound rating.
I was debating
between the Jeep and that, and then I got that, and I was like disappointed. Like the car just did not like accelerate properly. Like it was slow, laggy, and I was just not my I really do hope the Colorado gets a better car, a better version of it, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. We don't know much about Chevys, obviously. No, but that's awesome. So. Glad to hear that you had a really fun vacation with the family.
Yeah. How was your sprint weekend with Richard, the other man in your life?
That was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, but it was also very different from a track weekend. Mm-hmm. Like, you just show up there we showed up at 6:45. There was a line to get in through the gates. The gates opened up, and we all get in there. And Texas Spokes was the organization, and they were very efficient with parking everybody. Everybody get checked in, vehicle inspections, and then get in the event running. So it was like an autocross. It honestly was ran like an autocross. Granted, it's ran by autocross.org.
Yeah.
And so you had the start line on the front straight. You did the track. We were doing it in a counterclockwise configuration. And then the finish line was on not the back straight, but like the second to last corner.
Mm-hmm.
So
this is on Harris Hill, right?
Yeah, Harris Hill. Have you been there?
No, I haven't, but I want to.
It's a good little test and tune track. It's nothing crazy. Mm-hmm. Honestly, in the length of the track feels very similar to Audubon. Mm-hmm. Audubon South. Mm-hmm. So like that, it was a very short track, but there's a lot more elevation than Audubon. Mm-hmm. I don't really have any other track comparisons.
Average lap time there.
So we were doing, 1 minute? Well, when I was going, it was in the rain.
You were doing a sprint, though.
Yeah, it was a sprint, so it wasn't a full lap.
Yeah.
And I was finishing the sprint in 84 seconds, or like Richard did 71 seconds. And so it probably add another 20 seconds, maybe 10, 20 mm-hmm. seconds to actually do a full lap all the way around, because it'd be two more corners. Yeah, so a little over a minute, minute and a half.
Gotcha.
I'd say like a minute and a half, roughly. That's why I want to go back. I want to go figure out like what an actual lap would be like. Mm-hmm. Also, we were doing in the reverse configuration, so I want to see what it's like in the actual proper clockwise configuration. Mm-hmm. But in any case, it was cheap. It was $90.
Cheaper.
Yeah, cheaper than any any track day that I've done.
And you don't have to work.
Yes and no. Well, actually, you still do. There were some people that had to work. Not everybody was working correct. Uh-huh. So they just needed flaggers. So like some of the people, if you were assigned to be a flagger, then you would drive your car out to the flag station, park behind the tire wall, and then watch the corner.
But at least you could sit.
Yeah, there was no cone duty. Yeah. That was the biggest perk. There was no cone duty, so you weren't like running back and forth between cars driving through to set up cones and tell them like, hey, like this person went too off, they hit a cone. Mm-hmm. So that part I definitely enjoyed. Like, I'd be willing to do a track sprint only type situation where it's like you go out there Sunday morning, you do your track sprint, and then everyone's gone by 1 p.m. So, like, you're able to go out and, like, push your car. Say you did a new modification, you just want to go feel it out. Mm-hmm. You can get in there, get it done, and have lunch.
And you're launching your car, right?
And you're launching. Yeah. If your clutch isn't slipping.
Yeah.
Dude, that was rough. Yeah, so actually, because, like, when I did my session, so I launched in first gear, hooked up, it was fine, and then got in second gear. And then the ground was getting wet enough and slick enough that in second gear, I had power on oversteer. So I was pointing the car like mostly straight, that it was starting to turn a little bit. Uh-huh. But like I was not turning enough to expect the car to slip out, the back end to kick out, but it did. So like that was in one of my videos. In any case, the second run, my clutch was toasted. So went through first and second. I was like, is that me? Is that the clutch spinning or is that tire spinning again? Mm-hmm. Went to third and then it just like floored it. RPMs jumped to 7,000 RPMs. I was like, yeah, that's the clutch. So third run, fourth run, it was fine.
But, are you getting a new clutch?
Yeah.
Okay.
So remember NCM?
Yeah.
Since then I bought a clutch, but it's just been sitting on the shelf.
Gotcha.
So I'll be installing. Dude, that actually would be a good thing to touch on for the topic later today as well, is off-season modifications.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do that. I think I would definitely have a lot more fun with that one. In any case, but yeah, real quick, before we get into the topic, so anything else that happened in the past 2 weeks that you want to touch on? So last night we went to our buddy's wedding.
Before we go to that, I wanted to also touch on SCCA National Tour, actually.
Oh,
So their track sprint reminded me of the one event that I did with SCCA National Tour. It was at Gingerman back in 21 with my FRS, and it was a track day, or not track day, but like a time trial event, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in that time trial event, the way they do their timing, it doesn't matter like what your fastest time of the weekend is, it's the combination of your fastest times of each session. So you have to be consistently good.
Wait, say it again. It was the combination of your time? So they add it up?
They add the fastest time of each session.
Okay.
And that's how you get podium. So let's say like you get like a 150 lap one session, then you get a 138 lap the next session.
Mm-hmm.
That 150 lap still adds up, so that counts. So you have to be good every session.
So like, to make the math a little bit easier, say you did 2 1:30 minute 2 minute 30 session, or
a 2 minute lap.
A 2 minute lap. Okay. Let's say you do a 2 minute lap in session one,
yeah,
and
which is
another
fantastic,
2 minute
right?
lap in session three.
Uh-huh.
Or
what are you getting at?
They're adding up. Or yeah,
we can. They're adding up, right? So like, let's say like session one, you get a 2 minute lap.
Yes.
Session two, you get a 2 minute lap.
So now your overall is a four minute lap.
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. So now I understand.
So basically, you have to be consistently good, right? You can't. Yeah. If you're the type of person that takes like a few sessions to warm up and like start getting good laps, then you're gonna lose essentially.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So when was this? Like,
this was in 2021 in July.
Okay.
Or July or August time, I can't remember. But
so why bring it up now?
The reason I'm bringing it up is because they also had a track sprint and I really enjoyed it.
They
had a track sprint session where it was like you did your whole time trial stuff, and then there was one session where it was track sprint. They started us in the middle of Gingerman.
Yeah.
And we did turn, I think it's 10A or 10B.
Yeah.
This the shorter one, the one that we normally don't do.
Yeah.
And that was really fun. I really, really enjoyed it. And I want to do more track sprint stuff because it's just, you get the aspect of like launching your car, trying to figure that out, GG axles, but you know, it's okay. And then also just.
Clutch,
yeah. So,
yeah. Track sprints are a lot of fun. Like, I wish there were more of them around.
Uh-huh.
I definitely enjoy it so much more than autocrossing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. Dude, the autocross that you went to for the Toyota National event?
Oh, yeah.
It was $100.
Yeah. I forgot how much it was. Yeah, you're right. So it costs the same amount.
We did sign up late. That's why it was $100.
That
would have been $50.
I also signed up late for the track sprint, too, though, and it was $92. I think it would maybe. Actually, I don't know if there was a late and early registration because it was a waitlist situation anyways. Nonetheless, same price, and the track sprint was so much more fun. Also, I think I enjoy being on track. What I found out, I hate being on parking lot pavement because parking lot pavement, like, it's not rubbered in. It's rough. It's tearing up your tires.
Uh-huh.
And, it's just, it's bumpy. That was the other thing I was very surprised by.
Parasol was bumpy?
No. The parking lot that we were in.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there were just random bumps that would upset the car. And so.
The old-ass parking lot has been repaved in decades.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it's very bad on your tires. Like that pavement on that parking lot specifically is very rough. And there's gravel everywhere too.
Yeah. So. I've been to autocrosses over in West Texas when I was at college. And it was the same situation. Like same very coarse type pavement.
Mm.
Which I don't blame them. Like it's a parking lot. It's supposed to be cars are parked there.
Yeah.
But in any case.
I hate autocross. I'll be honest. I know we're probably going to get some people riled up with that comment, but like...
It's okay.
Dude, I don't understand people that like rage about autocross. You have to work so long and then you're stuck out in the heat. And yeah, there's people who are like, oh yeah, if you just know the right people, you have to work less or whatever. But I'm like, I don't care, dude. Like, there's people out there that don't know the right people and they have to work for 3 hours in the heat. Yeah. Texas heat, 110 degrees.
Yeah,
fudge that.
It's pretty hot. Now, I think a great idea, something that Tom said on their podcast, with the Lizard Brains podcast, is something that would be a great idea would be to have like...
Shout out to Lizard Brain podcast, by the
way. Yeah, but like kind of make it like charity work. Like invite, like there's school organizations that are trying to get money.
Yeah.
And so like have them come over. So like basically like if we sign up for an autocross event, instead of me having a cheaper price to work it, if I want, I could pay $20 more.
Yeah.
And that $20 would go towards the school or the student that is trying to put that money towards whatever school fund they're trying to set up. And then they would go and like get the cones up. Yeah. So like for them, they're invested in it because like, sweet, I just have to pick up cones and I get paid.
I like that. I like that idea a lot. And I remember listening to that too. And it reminded me of back in college, I was part of a club called ASME.
Mm-hmm.
American Society of Mechanical Engineers, and they had an event at Texas Motor Speedway where it was a NASCAR event, but they had us, like, we volunteered to work, and the money that we got from, like, working that event, that went to the club, and we used that money for the club activities and whatnot.
Yeah. Now, I understand, like, there's probably some kind of, like, policy that limits, like, how young the kids can be out there, like, running around grabbing
college
cones.
Kids. Like,
oh, yeah, but they're college kids.
Yeah, like grab people that have FSAE teams, the Formula Society of Automotive Engineer.
Yeah.
Like, they do autocross, right?
Yeah.
This is a great learning experience for them, too. They get to come out to those autocross events. They get to work, and then they also get to, like, if they want, they can sit shotgun with someone and go out on an autocross course.
Yeah. And I would have loved that also, even just in high school, because I was doing some autocross in high school.
Yeah.
And high school, that little way of like getting paid to be exposed to cars, using the money to go back towards high school funding.
Yeah.
That would have been a great little way. Yeah. I would be incredibly Yeah, I think it's a really good business model that Tom brought up.
Yeah.
So
we're doing that now?
Let's see if we can set it up.
Yeah.
We've got to go talk to some
The Racing Home podcast starts in autocross.
No. Yes. Plus track sprint.
And track sprints, yeah.
You can't... just don't be autocross. Not just autocross.
Anyways, yeah. Let's get to the next before we get to...
Yeah, so here. Actually today's topic, so I really want to touch on off-season mods. Because this is, for me, this is the biggest off-season I've ever had. Uh-huh. And it's going to make going out to tracks very difficult, which we'll touch on next week or next time we go and talk about
scheduling. Want to talk about the weekend, this past weekend?
Oh, okay. Back to the weekend real quick. Yeah. The wedding.
The wedding. The wedding was great. We had a friend, Max Simmons. He got married to one of our other good friends, Ellie. He is 6 foot six, 6 foot seven, tallest dude.
Yeah.
And I just want Ellie to know that he cuddled with me as well. So
On a camping trip.
So don't worry.
Out in Arkansas.
But yeah, it was a great wedding. The great fun Woodhouse had with all the college friends.
And yeah.
Other aspect was I got a Supra.
That's right. That's the other part you want to talk on.
I got a... so to those who don't know, I've transitioned from production side of Toyota to the sales side of Toyota.
Yep.
I am a product manager essentially for GR.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in charge
of... So GR product, so that includes the Supra, the 86, and the Corolla.
That's correct. So mm-hmm. I'm in charge of the GR 86 specifically.
Very fitting, considering... Yeah, it's all coming together and piecing together.
Yeah, and then when I was there, it was great. Basically, the role, I'm the one that... Actually, I don't want to touch on this, because I don't want people messaging me about it. they had us... Marketing wanted to do an event on track with us, and they gave us... options between GR Corollas and Supras and whatnot, and I decided to go with this manual Supra. I've never driven a Supra, and I've never driven a manual Supra.
They were going to say, I've never driven a manual before.
That too. But,
that's yeah.
but yeah, I just wanted to take to drive the Supra. I've never driven a Supra in general, and I've never driven a Supra on track either, so wanted to go out and do that. So they gave us those cars. They wanted us to go through the GR program. So to those who don't know, if you buy a GR car, you get a free track day with NASA.
Yeah. So that's very similar to like what Ford did with their Ford Performance Academy School over in Utah. Yeah. So like when I bought the Focus brand new, I did the same thing, but Ford's version. So Kara and I flew out to Utah, did a day and a half of track stuff over at Utah Motorsports Complex, and then flew back.
But they gave you the car there, right, to drive?
Yeah, so I didn't take my car over there. I drove Ford's Focus RS. I was very well broken in. They were all like tracked very heavily, but it was a lot of fun.
That's pretty cool.
So sounds like Toyota's doing the same thing.
It's not
similar.
It's not really.
Oh,
this is you buy a GR 86 or buy a GR Super or Corolla. You get a free track day, and you get to take a car on the track. Your own.
Oh,
car.
So the GR that you bought, you're taking it out there.
Exactly. Yeah.
So wait, is that only applicable to people in Texas or
anywhere in the country?
So if someone in California buys their GR 86, do they have to come to ECR in Texas?
No, they can go to any NASA event. It applies
to NASA event. Yeah, okay,
you get a free track day with NASA.
Okay, they're at your local NASA.
Wherever in the country.
Perfect. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's actually equally good.
Yeah. But since Toyota's in Texas and Plano and whatnot, they have a specific GR like coaching program as well.
Mm-hmm.
At ECR, for example. So they basically take you to like the beginner novice program of how you should be setting up your car, how you should, you know, torque your lug nuts, and
they walk through everything. That's really good, because that's how Ford also had to set up for their training program.
Yeah,
it was day one, step one. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, we are aware that there are some people that have been tracking for 10 years in this classroom. Mm-hmm. There's people that have never actually been on track, and so we're gonna go from day one type situations.
Mm-hmm.
But it's gonna be at a pace where the advanced person is not totally bored.
Yeah, yeah. So I liked it a lot. So I actually got one with my GR86 as well, and I did to my free NASA event with them.
Mm.
But because I have like time trial, time attack experience for a while, I just asked NASA. I was like, "Hey, can you switch me over to time trials?" And they were okay with that.
That's pretty cool. That's good.
So because my car was not anywhere near stock when I did mine. It was like full club star spec. So yeah, it was really good. They. Just wanted this. So the day started off with us in classrooms and whatnot. They they prepped our entire car for us. Like they were torquing our lug nuts. They were filling up gas for us while we were in the class and whatnot.
Whoa.
But that's like, I think that's like Toyota benefits. You wouldn't actually get that benefit if you were out there.
Gotcha.
Since we're headquarters people trying to come out and do all that. They're
I was
like,
just picturing someone like, ah, oh, crap, I need to go fill up again. I'm going to go buy a new Toyota so I can get a free tank of gas.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work that way. But yeah, so they put us in like the lead and follow sessions and I was just following the guy and they... Mm-hmm. Some of them knew my Brabham experience, but not all, like all of them. So they were kind of hesitant as well for me. It's kind of annoying, but I mean, part of main reason was like, I wanted to see how the program is and what the customers get from it. And if it's worth it, and do we need to improve on something?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But then they finally like let me out on my own with a Supra. Mm-hmm. And man, that Supra is awesome. Bone stock.
Yeah.
Even my tire pressures were not touched, right? Like, my tires were at 50 PSI.
What tires were on it?
Pile of Super Sports. Okay. Not even PS4Ss, Pile of Super Sports that come with on the car. Brakes were stock, brake fluid was stock, everything was stock. I think I tried to get a time out there, but my aim wasn't working. So the guy actually in the pits, the GR guys, when the crew...
They were timing you as you come around?
He saw me booking it. He saw like that I overtook a BMW. And then in the next lap I came around, I was like a solid like half a lap ahead of him. And he was like, dang, he's booking it. So I'm going to time him just to see what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And he timed me. He said I got like a 208, 209.
Nice. Okay.
Which is insane.
Yeah, for a stock car, completely stock.
Bone stock car, 100% stock, nothing done to it. For reference, my GR86 with the coilovers, wheels, tires, brakes, and some weight reduction, I think. I don't know if I had weight reduction at that time or not, but... did a 210 with RT660s and whatnot, right?
So for reference, for when I went out to ECR with my car, I did a 212.6.
Yeah.
And that was with, granted that was with a passenger. Yeah. Robbie was with me almost every time. And then, that was on RT660s as well.
And Aero.
Oh, and I had Aero as well. Yeah. I didn't have my E30 tune though. I was just on 93. No, I was on 93.
On 93 tune. Gotcha.
Yeah. So it was a little bit quicker.
And then, like, my fastest time with the GR86 out there is, like, 206, maybe 205.
That's pretty cool. It makes sense why it's such a competitive platform.
This car, I think, can do, like, sub 2 minutes very easily at ECR. And you can drive it home.
Yeah.
As I was driving this car home, I was thinking about it. Like, did I go wrong? Like, am I doing this wrong? You know, like, I got to drive the car to the track, set up a good time, a respectable time, and then drive it home.
Welcome to street class.
Barely. Have you seen the street class competitors out there, dude?
What? Me?
Minus you. You're the only one.
Oh, well, having gridlock street class competition in Texas, we are very niche. Actually, well, gridlock in general, Texas representation, very niche. But nonetheless, it is pretty cool to have
that
kind of...
What I'm saying is people, not Texas people, I'm just saying in general, in street class, it's not really street class. People aren't driving their cars to the event and doing time attack. When they're towing it out there.
Yeah.
And their cars are like not really street. It's gotten better after the turbo rule that they fixed, but...
I do agree with that. I still have my heated seats.
Yeah, you got your heated seats.
We'll get into that.
And whatnot, so it's great.
I'm very curious to see what the new rule set's going to be.
Yeah.
At the end of this week. But anyway, so the weekend, pretty solid.
Pretty solid. I want a Supra now as a daily driver, occasional track car.
So it's not your Supra.
It's not my Supra.
Okay. There's definitely a lot of people who think it is.
And I would not get a manual.
What? Whoa. Why?
I would not get a manual.
Wait, why would he not get a manual?
Dan, you want to get into that?
Yes. Did not expect that.
So the manual, it's a BMW manual, as we all know. It's the best BMW manual I've ever driven, at least, or I've gotten a feel of.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, like, the clutch is super spongy, the super long throw. It's just jerky when you're driving in normal mode, I guess. As a daily driver...
How does it compare to the Focus? I feel the Focus is pretty long clutch pedal travel.
This is longer. I think it's longer. I don't know. I haven't driven your car in a minute, but I think it's...
I didn't bring it this weekend.
Yeah. I think this was harder to drive than your car as a manual.
Hmm.
Yeah. Auto rev match was awesome, though.
Do you think... I was going to... okay. Yeah. I was going to say, do you think that stock tune might have something to do with it? Like with rev hang? Was rev hang a problem at all?
I didn't notice it. I'm really bad about rev hang. I don't notice rev hang.
Really?
I'm really bad about that.
Have you driven a... what's one of the cars? Wait, your car didn't have really bad rev hang?
People say it did. I just didn't never noticed it. I don't know why. Man. I'm like really bad about that. I'd never noticed. On stock tune, I've heard there's a little rev hang.
I have not driven your car on 85. I want to go drive it now.
Yeah, we can do it afterwards.
I want to see like how it compares to like from what I remember driving a stock.
Yeah.
But that's pretty cool. Sounds like a pretty fun weekend and cool to hear that basically your input is going to be directly impacting the GR line at Toyota now.
Gonna try to.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's still a Japan built Japan project.
You true.
Know? It's Akio Toyota's baby. So it's like he kind of gets to say what he really wants. I can pitch ideas. I can try to get whatever I want for the North American side, but I have to work with Japan quite a bit.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. Well, cool. Now we know. Get it. If you want a Supra, go for the automatic. Well, it's really just user preference. Depends.
The manual isn't. That was my preference. Like I would rather have the automatic, but I can see the appeal for a manual. If people that just want an engaging car that wants a manual, just still get a manual. It's still
driving to the back roads in Arkansas.
Yeah,
in the Ozarks.
For me, it's like automatic is faster.
It and is.
It's easier that is to true. Drive on.
That is definitely true. The automatic is far more competitive. Mm-hmm. So can we finally get onto the topic part?
All right, finally topic. But, okay, sorry.
Okay, it's like off-season modifications for like this year, which is like, I know it's really, really dumb to be buying all these parts prior to the rule set coming out.
Let me kind of give people a background on this a little bit. So normally everyone does off-season modifications to their cars, right? And they go through a list. This is Nick's, I think this is probably Nick's first time going all out on off-season modifications. So I'm really excited to hear what Nick is doing to his car to get it prepped for street class.
Yeah. Granted, and that's where I was coming up here. What I was going to say is that these are all modifications that I'm making that should still be legal next year. Like, I just don't see a way that next year's rule set causes any of these modifications to become illegal. Mm. So we'll just go from the top. So,
what you doing, Nick?
Well, let's start with brakes real quick. Okay. So the brakes over at Laguna on the last session, I cracked a brake rotor. Mm-hmm. So new brake rotors. So I'm going with the gyro disc front rotors. So two piece. So it'll be my first time I actually have like a two piece floating set.
Nice.
Did you get
spares?
Spare rings? No.
Always have spare rings.
Are they more likely to crack than like?
In general, always have spare rotors.
Well, I always do have spare rotors. I always have my stock rotors with me. So that's why I'm still able to drive the car right now.
Gotcha.
So, but like it's literally the stock brake rotors I bought the car with.
I'm just saying, like, if for competition reasons too, like, we go pretty far out. So, like, if your rotor cracks and you're, like, after for the first session, that's a shitty way to not
and, do the and the event. Yeah. That's why I always have my suckers with me. They won't perform as well, but at least I'll be able to finish out the session or the event with the stock rotors. Mm. And on top of that, so these are the new front rotors, so I'm still keeping the stock Ford Brembo calipers, new pads, titanium shims, trying to keep the heat away from the brake fluid as much as I can. The passenger brake caliper is brand new already. Nice. So all I need to do is rebuild the driver's side.
So why is that one caliper brand new, Nick?
I shouldn't have brought that up. Yeah, so when I was getting ready for Laguna and I was doing the brake flush, I was way too tired, but I was torquing the bleeder screws, and on the passenger side, I looked up, double checked the torque rating, and in my head, I read pound feet, and I just went with it. So
what did you torque it to?
I was going to try to torque it to 100 pound feet.
100 pound feet
on the bleeder screw.
Not 100 Newton meters.
It was really
100 pound feet.
I know.
Your lug nuts aren't supposed to be that high.
I know. It's because I have all the like the torque ratings inside my my note, and I didn't like keep any units in there.
Bro, but
it's
logic.
Just a number. I know.
Like, you know, like small ass screw.
And I've done it before too. And I've done it before where I've torqued them to the proper pound inches. Yeah, it's pretty bad. Dude, and what's really sad too is like I was gonna step it up. I always try to like I start off on like 20 pound feet and then I step it up to the actual torque rating.
Yeah.
I broke it at 20 pound feet.
So you stripped the damn
bolt. I stripped the threads. So anyways, brake fluid was flowing out. So I was freaking out. And this is also like 2 days before we're heading out to Laguna. So I was like, how the heck am I going to go and get a new brake caliper? Realistically, I could have or probably gone to one of the Ford dealerships to go and get a new caliper. But in any case, so going back to the Fort Performance, one of the things they gave to all the students after the event was like a trophy. I don't want to call it a trophy. A souvenir. Mm-hmm. But the souvenir is an actual brake caliper for the Ford Focus RS.
Like it's an actual stand and whatnot.
Too. Yeah, on the stand. And all the ports are just plugged up with plastic caps. And so when like while brake fluid is still like seeping out of the brake caliper, I was thinking like, how am I going to go and fix this? And it dawned on me like, what are the chances that the caliper that's sitting as my souvenir caliper that's sitting on my TV stand will fit this and like remedy the problem. And so I ran inside, got it, and lo and behold, it was the passenger side caliper. So I was like, perfect. So
it was the passenger side too?
Yeah. I would have been like, it would not have helped me if it was the driver's side.
That's insane.
So the chances are like the side that I stripped matched the side that I had as a souvenir.
That worked out perfectly. That was an actual caliper.
Yeah, too. And all the seals are good to go. It's just been sitting there waiting for me to use for the past, 6 years now.
Nice.
So in any case, the passenger side caliper, good to go. Good to go for the next, like, theoretically 3 years, two to three years until a rebuild is needed. The driver's side, it is tired, so I'm going to go and rebuild the piston and seals on the driver's side caliper, and that'll be the brake situation for 2024. Good to go. Rears are doing just fine. That's not the most exciting part. So the parts that I am most excited for is that I'm finally going full 85. So what this requires is going with XDI Evo high-pressure fuel pump and 2,000 cc injectors.
Nice.
And then because it's going to require a retune, I'm also doing the intercooler and the turbo wastegate actuator.
Nice.
So.
And who's your tuner again?
Brian from JST.
Nice. Shout out.
Shout out to Brian from JST. He is phenomenal to work with, and he has literally all the Focus parts that I've been needing. So if you got a Ford Focus RS, ST, or any other vehicles that he works on, I think he does a lot with four cylinders. So if you're listening to this, he might be able to help you out. He most likely can help you out. So reach out to Brian Tyson with JST Performance. So any case, full 85. So I'm, it's really, I'm not going to be making much more power. The biggest perk to it is like the cooling benefits and I don't have to keep pre-mixing.
I want to see your car on dyno.
And that's
your... Before and after.
Yeah. I won't be able to get it before. But after, I'll definitely be able to go and do. I don't really care like what it's doing right now. But I want to see what it's doing after. Just because...
I just want to see the power gain, if there's any.
Just compared to any other Ford Focus RS dyno graph
out there. It's not as simple as that.
Yeah, I know.
Because every dyno is different.
It is. True.
You know how many K24s are out there that they claim they make 250, but then they go to a different dyno that makes 220 or 210?
Yeah, that's true. Nonetheless, though, full 85, finally.
Hells yeah.
And honestly, it's going to be, I don't think we're going to be getting a whole lot of power from the 85 itself. I think most of the power is going to be gained from the intercooler as well. Yeah. The whole thing overall will just help with power, and it's going to be far more consistent. So, better for cooling, more power, and just take advantage of the corn. That way, like, if we ever go out to states that have 91 octane, I can just keep filling with 85 or just bring 85 from Texas. And there's a 85 station not too far from my home.
Nice.
The other big thing that I'm finally going to do for the first time ever in my life is aftermarket seats. Nice. So I'm still rocking the stock seats that are powered on the driver's side, main on the passenger side, but heated on both of them. And so I know the driver's side heat seat weighs 65 pounds. Oh, shit. These Recaro pole positions weigh 13 pounds each. So, what?
Clarify. So I thought I'd be losing a lot of weight when I like swapped over to the Sparco seats that I got.
Yeah. Not.
It's not just the seats weight that you got to look into. You got to look at the seats base, the seat side supports and whatnot as a whole unit.
Yeah.
I think I lost 10 pounds.
Like factors, the brackets were that heavy?
They're steel brackets.
Mm.
So the seat, the whole seat as a whole, I think weighed about 30 pounds.
Maybe I can go and fab something up out of aluminum.
Please don't.
Why not?
I had a aluminum side mounts on my seat, and when I wrecked at Mid-Ohio, they were bent pretty bad.
That's a good point.
It's just not worth it. Like, and then I went to steel mounts on the side. It's just like, it's an extra couple pounds, but like for safety reasons, it's just not worth it.
Fair. Well, whatever it's, whatever the weight savings ends up being, it is like
it's still gonna
another, be, it should be a decent amount.
Like your car, it's gonna be half the weight. So like your car seats weighs about 65 pounds, you said?
Yeah.
So roughly 30 pounds, 35 pounds for the aftermarket seat with a base and everything.
Yep.
Still 30 pounds of weight savings each side.
Yeah. It'll, I'm hoping for
60 pounds?
Yeah.
That's basically good. Carol out of the car.
Yeah.
Carol's his wife.
Actually, yeah, she weighs that little. That's definitely true.
She weighs 60 pounds, yeah.
Yes, she weighs 60 pounds.
Carol nothing is more. Actually 3'9".
She weighs 60 pounds dripping wet.
Yep. 3'9" person, you know.
Yep.
Sorry,
Carol. we're getting sidetracked. Oh, so, but what I am excited about, like with all these, with this season, with the stuff I'm adding on to the focus.
What?
Nothing. I don't really have much more to go and do to the car. I take it back. If there's more for me to do as far as like weight savings, I'm getting into the realm of like doing some very expensive body panel replacements.
Rid of your back seats and put the roll bar in.
I don't think there's going to be a weight savings there. Like the roll bar, the Bolton roll bar that I have is very, very heavy.
Okay, but
I think it weighs more than the rear seats.
Does that roll bar have a harness bar too in there?
Yeah.
Don't you need that?
I was thinking about just doing like the rear buckles situation, like what you did with your car.
If you have a roll bar.
I know. Might as well go and install it.
Like you already have it.
I'm going to weigh everything. I'm going to reweigh and see if it's break even, then it is in my interest to go and install the roll bar.
Yeah.
I need to double check the rules. I don't know if I'm allowed to leave the rear seats out.
You can take your seats out if you install a roll bar.
In street class?
Uh-huh.
I'll double check on that.
Pretty sure. I think I know I can make... You're allowed to remove interior if it's for safety equipment, which is the roll bar.
I can remove interior bits that are in the way of the safety equipment.
Okay.
I can still... So
you know how many people in street class are not running back seats because they have a roll bar?
I've actually never looked into that.
Yeah.
I don't walk around and like look and pry at people's cars.
I'm not looking and prying at people's cars either, but like just.
But a lot of them still have back seats. Like I see, like a lot of them
who have. Does Eddie have back seats?
Eddie?
I don't think Eddie has back seats.
Is there a chance that we could like pull it up on his Instagram? What are the chances that he has a
paid
photo?
Pause the podcast and then we'll look and come back to you. So we're back. I couldn't figure it out. So
And here's a rule. So vehicles must retain OEM interior components. Example, dash, carpets, headliner, and all must be in factory positions. Parenthesis, interior may be trimmed or modified to accommodate safety components. Accommodation for aftermarket racing seats where driver and passengers are allowed. All seats must be track worthy and capable. Okay, that's talking about the seats aspect. Capable of securing the occupant. So the way I interpret that is I can install the roll bar, but I can only trim pieces that are in the way of the installation.
Mm.
Technically, I can still have the seat installed with the roll bar, I think.
I know what you're saying, but I'm pretty sure I've seen people that have taken that rule as like, okay, I can remove the behind the B pillar to put in a roll bar.
All right, I'm going to get clarification on this, because
I texted Eddie, so we'll find out.
Yeah, that's right. Right now, plan A is I'm not going to have it. I'm just going to do the other way. I take it back. Plan A is I go and install the roll bar and remove the rear seats. But if the rear seats have to stay in place, even with the roll bar installed, then I'm going to do a different weight savings method.
Another also reason why I'm telling you to install the roll bar is because like if I could put a roll bar in my car, if I already had one, let's say, I put it there, and getting to use proper harnesses.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the harness that I have
does do chassis stiffening as well. It gets in the way of using the car, is the other part that,
you
like.
You don't drive that car very often, though.
I drive it every week. Once a week, at least.
Oh.
At least once a week, I drive it to work.
Well, how many people are you, like, taking the backseat?
When we were in Audubon, we took the Focus to your sister's place, and.
Yeah, but.
We do it pretty often.
Very rare. Like, that's once a year.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, we'll find other ways.
I mean, if you want to play origami and, like, kind of jungle gym through to the back seat while the roll bar isn't... That's so unsafe. We got into a car accident.
Just going don't get in an accident. You're fine. all right, what else are you getting?
That was basically it. Oh, I'm selling a new clutch. Nice. But I'm trying to save money. I was trying to go for upgraded clutch, but like it just, I already have the OEM clutch.
Yeah.
An OEM flywheel, a brand new one from Ford. So I'm just gonna install that.
So this man listed out like $5,000 or $6,000 worth of parts, and he's like, "I'm trying to save money."
Yeah, because I spent $5,000 or $6,000 worth of money on parts.
I guess
so. I need to save money somewhere else.
Yeah.
Oh man, yeah. I got a wife to keep happy. We have other plans.
Yeah, but you're also living a dink lifestyle, bro. I'm just living
alone. I'm trying to put money aside, trying to like make sure we can retire when we want. And
yeah, I'm just alone and lonely.
Yeah, we're here in your home. No, it's gonna come up every time. Keep losing followers.
And I still love you.
All right, well, that's me. That's what. Jeez.
You know what I'm talking about, the YouTube video?
Yeah.
The guy just like goes, I shouldn't be making fun of a guy like crying.
Oh, goodness. So that's, oh, God, I'm coughing. So that's the focus. What are you doing?
I have no idea.
Really? Nope. There's no plans that you have?
I had, going into this off season, I had zero plans. I knew, and I need to take some more weight out of the car, so potentially deleting AC. Like, a lot of the stuff that I'm going to do is, like, it's just potential. I spent a lot of money this past season doing six events all across the country, and like I spent a lot of money in modifying the car as well last season. So I want to just save
save money wherever you can.
Yeah. So like I want to, like, ideal world. I want to upgrade my coilovers. I want to upgrade my suspension arms, going to like full SBL or something, full sphericals, and then. Taking more weight out of the car by taking out the AC or something like that. But honestly, like, not really, I don't really care as much. So I'm just chilling.
That's good. And that's, there's joy to do
suspension stuff. Feel like that's, if I get a good sponsorship or like a partnership, hate the word sponsorship, but a good partner to join for next season, then, yeah, I'll look into upgrading coilovers.
That'd be good.
I also want to clarify, because Race Comp Engineering is my partner for this past season, so I don't want to like shit on him. their coilovers are great.
Yeah.
I've had them for 5 or 6 years now. Still recommend them to everyone with a budget.
You're now exceeding their use case.
Pretty much. So they're great coilovers under 3K.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a better coilover that exists for the chassis for under $3,000. The other coilover that did do was good for under that price range for this car was the first generation Olens that Ravi actually had.
Yeah.
But they don't make that anymore. The new Olens, the new version of that Olens, it's too soft. It's more for street than it is for track. So
okay.
There's just nothing better out there for that price range. And what I'm looking at now is the coilovers like Nitrons, MCSs, JRZs, potentially, Motons. I don't know. That's a little too out of my budget. But, those are expensive. They're like anywhere between $4,000 to $7,000.
Jeez.
That's money to a good partner.
Yeah. No, I know what you're talking about. I'm still rocking my $1,200 coilovers on the Focus.
But yeah.
They get the job done. But if money were no object, I'm forgetting the name of the company right now, but it's like a $6,000 coilover. It's a company based out of the UK.
Nitrons.
No, these are not Nitrons. That's what I'm thinking of. Is Nitron based out of the UK?
Yeah.
Do they have do they often work with OEMs dynamic dampening controllers?
Probably.
DDCs.
LKW?
No, it's not KW. There's another one. I have it bookmarked. But in any case, that's what I'm doing. So, interesting. So, you're going to keep going out to these GridUp events with the basically the same car, 2023 spec?
Maybe some minor changes here and there. But, yeah, we'll see. I'm getting kind of, like, tired of competing consistently like that too. It takes a lot, especially when you're alone and by yourself doing all of this. Like, you don't have a team to help you out or whatever. Like, I tow my car to all the events myself alone in my car, and driving all that huge distance, taking all that PTO, doing all the work myself and whatnot, it's it's expensive.
It is.
It's expensive, and it takes a beating on you.
Yeah.
So next year, I don't plan on doing more than like four, maybe five events, and then just being local.
Yeah, that's what I'm excited for 2024 as well. Do more local events, because we've already committed to doing January 27th. Well, say committed. We're all promising that we will sign up as soon as registration opens for the Apex event in at ECR on January 27th. Which reminds me, hopefully I get all my stuff done prior to that event. I'm still waiting for my fuel injector and fuel pump to arrive. That's the those are the last two items that I need. They have a 10-week lead time.
Cool.
But once they do arrive, car's going up in the air. I'm getting everything installed and fluids changed out. Hopefully ready for ECR. The other one would be Lap Attack in April. And then, yeah, we can talk more about the schedule after this upcoming Friday.
Yeah, after PRI, we'll see the schedule for A Good Life, a full, complete schedule, and then we can see.
Yep. Anything else you want to bring up?
Watch me, like, go full ham again on the car.
Wait, what do you mean full ham?
Like, do everything that I told you that I was going to do. Right now, it's a potential, but I watch it, like, actually happen. I spent another $15,000 on the car.
You should do it.
Dude.
Wow, Racelands cost $500. That's it?
Yeah, Racelands are...
I know they're trash. I did not think they would still be that cheap. I thought they would have gone up.
You know how much it costs them to make Racelands?
No.
Like $200. Or maybe that.
Well, I could, let me rephrase my answer. Yeah. Somewhere south of $500, because that's how, I mean, they have to make a profit. So there's going to be a profit margin in there.
Yeah. Do not recommend.
I ran them once on my Subaru. Wouldn't I recommend them either.
You had Racelands on your WRX?
Yeah. That's a street version. Like, they were, for just driving around the street for lowering the car, if that's what your mission is, they're fine. But as soon as you put them in some kind of a track environment or a aggressive driving environment.
I'm worried I'm going to hit a pothole and it's going to, like, cut in half.
I never had any quality issues. Like, they were pretty stout quality-wise.
I've heard of people have quality issues with BC. Where literally the suspension just, like, collapses on itself when you hit a pothole.
Maybe isn't that KW than what I was thinking of for the coilovers I was looking at? DSC Sport. Hold on. I think I just found it.
DSC Sport.
Yeah. DSC Sport Control Module. So they make one for the KW suspension for the Focus, but they also make their own coilover. So that's what I would try to go with. Yeah. In any case, that's enough for Karmas, and I need to get back to Austin. We're podcasting from Dallas right now. DSC Sport, Active Suspension Controller.
Before we end, let's...
No.
Oh.
No, sorry, go on.
No, before we end, I just want to say, for people that... We want to start asking people questions, and if you have any questions for us to like touch on during this podcast, it could be anything from like life, or how to manage life, how to... what motorsports are driving home or whatever. I don't know. Just anything.
Yeah.
Ask me about my favorite ice cream flavor. I don't care.
What is your favorite ice cream? Hold on. No. We'll answer that question right now. What's your favorite ice cream?
I don't know, dude. They're all good.
Cookie dough.
Anything cookie dough. But mint. I hate mint chocolate. I don't mind anything with mint besides gum. I don't understand people that just eat mint ice cream. Like,
mint is a I agree. Mint is a breath freshener. It's not a flavor.
No, cookies and cream is like the basic option that I go with every time.
Oh, I go with basic
Or cookie. Mango ice cream. Oh my
basic
god,
basic cookie. Oh,
that's okay. My brown in me.
Basic cookie dough. I know it's everywhere, and then it's I don't know. It's so good. I love it. In any case,
shoot us a message on Racing Home Podcast Instagram. The Instagram is racing_home_podcast.
Correct.
And we'll try to get your questions answered.
Yeah, so DM the account, the Racing Home Podcast Instagram account, or I'm going to be setting up a post where you can add your questions in the comment section. Mm-hmm. That way, next time we're podcasting, we can read into the comments. Then that way they can also have individual people respond to each other if you want.
Yeah.
But if you just want your question directly to Fez and I, then yeah, racing_home_podcast Instagram account, hit that DM, and we will read your message and say it out on the podcast.
Yeah, like and subscribe.
I'm telling my mom to do it so we have something.
I'm telling your mom to Just ask a question.
Let me have at least one. Anyways, I'm going to sign off here.
Mom, ask me a question, please. Please.
It's for the content.
It's for the grandma.
Anyways, talk to y'all later. Thank you for whoever's still listening to us right now.
Bye. This is for the first podcast we didn't talk about Robbie.
It's never too late. Too late.
It's too late. Ending it. Bye.
See ya.